broken. She's vomiting what looks to be blood in front of a bunch of Venezuelans.
They're like, Kowalski's never done that.
No, yeah, that's not in the show.
But it's good to have you on, man. Episode 88 of In the Hall podcast.
88?
I don't know how you do this live.
Yeah, I do this live Monday through Friday on the radio, 104.1. A shameless plug.
Dude, plug it up. And this is Orlando.
Orlando, all of Central Florida. We have the biggest legal broadcast that you can have. I think it's something that I can pretend that I know what it means, which is like 100,000 gigawatts.
It sounds good.
I don't know. Every time they tell me that, I'm like, back to the future?
Yeah, you're like, well, make sure our flux capacitor is good.
Yeah, where we're going, we don't need roads? Is that what is that what's going on? All I know is that it's the biggest legal broadcast a radio station can legally have.
It sounds good.
Yeah, no, it goes probably, I don't know, 2 hours outside of Orlando.
Is there anyone doing illegal broadcasts?
What do you mean? Like a legal?
I mean, you said you're the biggest legal podcast. Yeah, can you go black market? Yeah. Like, yo, we're slinging this to Milwaukee.
Legally, this is the biggest broadcast, like the antenna that you can have.
Okay, so you're maxed out on antennas.
Yeah, we're maxed out on distance that the radio program can be heard.
Is that because if the signal gets stronger, people are going to die of strange diseases?
That's a great question. Is it? Phenomenal question. I couldn't tell you.
You throw up another antenna in the bed of your truck.
If it's at 110,000 gigawatts, maybe tumors happen.
Yeah. They're like, look, we love to spread your show, but let's do a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want any more bumps on people's thyroids or some shit. I don't know. I have no idea.
The power just went out in Texas, but we don't know if that's your show.
But I love doing podcasts because I'm not sure if I might curse more than I ever have.
Oh, that's another thing.
I got FCC guidelines.
Do you have to put the switch on? Like, okay, Ross, you're going in here.
I don't know. You get used to it, but there are so many weird rules about FCC. I could call you a pussy on air. I can go, man, you are such a pussy. But I can't say girls have pussies. I can call you a dick. You are such a dick. But I can't say my dick itches. How odd is that, right?
What is that?
Get your mind blown.
Who came up with that rule?
The same person who thought of the 100,000 gigawatts rule. I don't know.
Maybe.
So how about this? This is another thing that blows my mind about FCC guidelines. Everything changed during the Super Bowl nip slip of Janet Jackson.
That's when it was like,
the FCC stomped on the wrong people.
Wow.
So you see Michael Jackson's nipple slip, and that was also
Michael Jackson.
Janet Jackson's.
Yeah, no,
that's a different show. That was Super Bowl 22. That was earlier. But as soon as that nipple happened, as soon as JT just straight rips off that bra. And I'll never forget that Tribal Sun nipple piercing. That was a big deal.
Oh, it's ingrained in your mind?
Yeah, yeah. I know it's a Tribal Sun on her right titty. That was like it could have been my first or second one.
Might have been.
I mean,
it could have been a lot of people's first.
My first one is definitely Kate Winslet, though. Now when I think about it, Kate Winslet's tatas were my one and two boob.
Was that on TV as well?
No, I think my mom brought me out to see the movie Titanic, and then there's the Kate Winslet, draw me like, I forgot the line.
I don't remember.
Draw me like one of your French ladies, something like that. But I'll never forget. It was weird knowing that the first boobs that I'm officially seeing is like right next to my mom.
Yeah, mine was the same thing.
And now when I think about it, I guess my mom, I saw her boobs when I was a kid.
But that's
uncomfortable.
That's in-house boobs. So that doesn't count.
Yeah, those are organic.
It's gonna happen.
I already munched on those.
Yeah, that's National Geographic.
Yeah,
It's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal.
But yeah, FCC definitely changed with the Janet Jackson thing, and ever since then, radio wavelengths have never been the same.
That's crazy. They just were like, "This is it."
Yeah,
crack down.
They started giving a damn.
So you do a live radio show, and I didn't realize how big it was until I went to Margaritaville.
Yeah.
Shout out Jimmy Buffett.
All day.
I
love trying to, did I do, I may have done this during that set, was I live in the middle of my set. I look to the left and I always go, is he ready? We're good?
Bro, I talk about that probably once a week and with
then
somebody.
And then I introduce Jimmy Buffett. And no one comes out.
So if you're listening, I go to Ross's show. The comedy club is closed. And then I'm like, well, what the hell? Is it canceled? But they're like, no, it's in the conference room.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, or the ballroom or whatever. Just a giant banquet hall,
mm-hmm.
which is normally never good.
It's not good. It's not
comedy.
Not ideal. But then again, the actual room that it's usually held at, also not that great. Exactly. So I'll take the ballroom because the ballroom has carpet.
Yeah, carpet. And it had the giant fish sculptures hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Which you shouted out. But yeah, the funniest thing, dude, that was probably just mid-show. You got me, too.
Oh, yeah?
But you're like, you just look to your left. Mid-act, like probably like
middle of the joke.
Probably like 22 minutes in.
Yeah.
Just randomly. And you go, is he ready? Is he ready? All right. Jimmy Buffett, everybody. And people were like, no. This is like, bro, people that stay in Margaritaville that live and breathe. Like, there's a lot of parrot tattoos.
Yeah.
There.
A lot of fishing shirts with the gill on the back.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll never understand the fishing shirts with the one individual fish gill.
It's for airflow. You got to let the back fat air out.
Yeah, it's like a stupid cape.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a handicap cape. Handy cape. It's a handy cape. Those fishing shirts.
Yeah, it looks like Superman's like prototype. They're like, we're not going to go with that one.
Yeah, it's Superman underwater.
I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, it's so weird.
But bro, that's when I was just like, damn, this radio show must be huge because the table next to me was just, and I was like in the back. This guy was like, Ross, I fucking love you, Ross.
It's
he was like hammered, dude.
The radio station 104.1 Real Radio WTKS.
Yeah, he kept yelling, Real Radio.
It's just an anomaly of a radio station that I don't think a lot of people would guess that it would still be thriving. But right. It is. And guess what? As someone who's like on the younger, I'm 32, but I'm fully aware that podcasts have blown up in the last 10 years.
Right.
I mean, maybe a little bit longer. They are so needed and essential for entertainers like us and stuff. So in the beginning, I kept thinking, I was like, is this a dinosaur? And kind of it is. But there's something special about that radio station, which really is that we're not, when people think of talk radio, they think right wing or political or anything like that.
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately. And guess what? They're right. If you look at the top 10 biggest radio shows of all time, like almost all of them are political.
Right.
And I'll never understand why it's only essentially right wing. I think it's because maybe the left dominates the TV when it comes to, I who knows?
Right. I feel like the left is on Netflix.
Yeah, they're on Netflix, right got talk radio. But yeah. But we stay away from politics. We're trying to, I think the business model for that radio station, which I've genuinely learned to believe in, is funny and interesting. Interesting and funny. That's the two things that I think that each show is trying to do. Now, different levels of funny and different levels of interesting, each show has their own balance.
Right.
But
and everyone has their own take on what's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Netflix dominates the internet, or the left, because people have, like, emails, and, like, Southerners kind of stay away from the internet.
Yeah, man.
So they're like, well, I'll turn on the radio in my Chevy, but I ain't going fucking.
Yeah.
I ain't getting a Gmail. That's how they get you.
People in Northern Florida are still trying to figure out how to log in.
Yeah, exactly.
What is this? Create karate?
Why do I got to confirm the password? I already typed it in.
ACC out. What is that? What is ACC out?
Then they gotta text you too, and they're like, "Well, I ain't got a cell phone."
Yeah, shit. Yeah. Part of me is just recently, I've been wanting to get a home phone.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. For no other reason than when people come over, they're like, "Yo, is that a home phone?" I'd be like,
"I kind of like that."
I kind of feel like it would be like a Batman phone. It should be like a red house phone, like on the president's desk. This goes straight to the president.
Oh, like it's got the nuclear.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, launch them.
Yeah,
you just hang up.
Yeah, I want that.
It's just you say one. It's the phone where you say one sentence. And yeah. Then you hang up.
And it's all in code. It's like alakazam, abracador, yeah, keto, exactly. Ecuador.
Keto, fire.
Keto, fire, bucket head. What? Cornbread.
They're like, oh, I think that's the code. They're like looking through the secret code definition.
Yeah, book. I want a house phone.
That is dope.
It was retro, bringing it back. And then like a 50-foot corded wire. Just massive.
Just all tangled up.
Yeah, just having my dogs just trip over it. Maybe my dog gets depressed and goes like, no, today's the day I'm ending it.
With the home phone cord?
And I'm using the home phone cord.
I don't know how, remember like 911 as a kid?
Yeah.
They would say like, oh, even if you hang up the home phone, they still know like the address. But with a cell phone, if you call and hang up, does the 911 operator just go, do they like actually search for the ping or they go, well, shouldn't have had T-Mobile.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they just like,
yeah.
What's the...
I remember...
I think that sometimes.
One time I was a kid, I just walked up to a payphone. And when I was a kid, my imagination was wild. Always in a scene, always in a movie. I pretended that trumpets were sound wave guns and I was always at war. I just...
Well, you had a trumpet?
Yeah, I had a trumpet.
And you held it like
I used a brother's trumpet and never played it, but always pretend like that bad boy was locked and loaded.
Yeah, exactly.
Always. The toaster is on the hip. I was ready. I was such an odd kid, but one time outside, and I remember this, outside of a Freshens yogurt okay. place, I walked up to a payphone when those were a thing, and I walked up to it. I pulled the phone off the hook, and I hit 911, and then I just started talking within a scene. I just started going like, "Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, we're there, we're ready. Should we hit them on the 6 o'clock? I've got my sound wave gun." All right, bye. And then I hung up, and my mom saw me and was like, who were you? What was that? I said, nothing. I had no idea that if you just walk up to a payphone, you hit 911, and then someone,
it's gonna
hit. And then I guess maybe I don't remember anybody on the other line, but I just started talking as if.
Just like a scene. You're like, it's done.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
They're like, wait, sir, what? Where are you, sir?
Buckethead, cornbread. Message received.
So did they pull up or?
No, oh, I mean, then we were on the way out of the Freshens yogurt.
Oh, there you go. You did a drive-by.
Did a drive-by 911 call and dipped.
with a yogurt in your hand.
Yeah, just left it with the weirdest.
Yeah, it's just some kid stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do that.
Being a kid is the tits. God.
Unless
your parents hate you. Yeah, that's a respectable clause on that statement.
I was thinking about your Orlando robbery bit. But I was just thinking like people do think Orlando is this like paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like Hollywood until they get there and they go to the Walk of Fame and they're like, why is that guy shitting on the
what's up with that?
Why is he shitting on the Tom Hardy star or whatever it is.
There was a phenomenal comedian when I first started. And before I even bring up his bit, his name was Tom Murphy and he stopped doing stand-up, which still bothers me to this day. But I remember one of his jokes and it was just the observation of when people come down to Orlando, they never leave the tourist side. So everyone thinks the perception of Orlando is that it's just a bunch of chain restaurants and mini putt-putt golf courses.
There is a lot of that, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
It's a lot.
But if you leave that area, then, you know, you're going to run into some culture and a little bit of crime
yeah,
as well,
say that.
You, you know? You know? But I just always thought that was funny of how many Brazilians have showed up to Orlando and have been just overwhelmed by safari putt-putt golf courses.
They're like, this is America?
Yeah, this is it.
Your mind must melt from another country when you land into Orlando and you just... Because the first 3 days I was in LA, I'm like, this is a paradise.
Yeah.
And then a year later, I moved there and 4 days in, I go, oh no, there's a lot of tents.
Yeah, there are a lot of tents. I mean, homeless is in every
right
major city. And the more people that you have in the city, but still, I mean.
But I'm just saying, like, it's, you kind of peel back the curtain. So it's like you just show up from your country and it's just fake waterfalls, a lot of mini golf, and then like elephants that go around in a circle, and you're just riding it, eating a pretzel. Like, this is the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, I'll never understand this too about the mini putt-putt golf courses. So many baby alligators. What are they doing? How is this happening?
Yeah, who got the permit for this?
Who got the permit?
They go, hey, look, we got a mini golf course and we want to do baby gator. They're like, they probably finished the sentence. Yeah, you want to do baby gators? All right, we're gonna send the baby
gator. Yeah, we got the baby gators.
We're gonna send them.
And they don't even say like a number of baby gators. Do you want like a half pound of baby gators?
Some of them have like 30. You're like, wow, this is a lot.
What's happening? Do you just have a pregnant gator just getting it all day, every day behind hole 7?
Dude, they just bring them in.
I'll never understand why they're mainly baby gators. Odd. Very odd.
Because once they get big, they got to go.
What happens?
Because the thing's going to climb out. It's going to be on hole 7.
Yeah, I don't know where the baby gator trade in Orlando is through the roof right now.
I'm sure in this apartment complex, there's someone with like rare box turtles that they're boxing up and just shipping via Amazon.
Hey, the grind is real. The hustle has got to hustle.
I met a guy the other day. He sells tarantulas.
What?
And it's just like, it's just one of those businesses where you're like, one, I don't want to even know how you got into it.
Yeah.
And two, it's just like, I don't know. If you're making six figures off spiders, it's just.
I'm down.
Your life's got to be very interesting.
You make 150 G's per leg. That's props to you, Tarantula Tom.
And who are you selling these rare spiders too? That's the other thing. It's not the guy selling them, it's his clientele.
It's a putt-putt golf course in some different country that's like, oh, they do baby gators, we do tarantulas.
You think a guy locked down the contract for Congo River Golf? He's like, yo, we're getting gators in every pond.
Yeah, I'll never understand baby gators. I feel like they're just impregnating gators for putt-putt golf courses. I think this might actually start from, this might go all the way to the top.
This is the CIA involved.
I think CIA, MK Ultra, whatever. I don't even know what MK Ultra is. I just know that it's
mind control.
Mind control?
Yeah.
Well, then they should have called it MC Ultra.
Which they do at Harvard.
Did they go mind control and then just spell control wrong? Is it mind control with a K? Control it?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, oh, are you guys going with a Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, or
K's for everything?
I don't think they could call it MC Ultra because that sounds like a mixtape is coming. you can't call MK Ultra like, MC Ultra.
Is that an EDM festival?
Yeah,
people start researching it.
Killed it at EDC.
Yeah.
MC Ultra, there has to be a DJ.
Oh, there's someone out there.
And if you're thinking about MC Ultra, do it. You got to do it.
You got
it. Yeah, if that market hasn't been hit, you're welcome. That's so great. So one reason why I am absolutely here, and this is one of my favorite parts. I told you this. One of the first things that I said to you, I was like, dude, I love what you're doing. I was a fan of what I was seeing online and stuff, but I also know that I think we probably fundamentally disagree on like so many little things.
That was the first thing you've ever said to
me. Yeah.
And I was like, that was odd.
I love disagreements.
I got off stage and you were like, that went well. And I was like, thank you. And then you were like, I think you and I would disagree with a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then I go, all right.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I became so I yearn for that. And before in my early 20s, I wouldn't ever find that interesting. But I don't know.
I'm at the point where if someone disagrees with me, I'm like, I see it.
Yeah,
I see. Here's the thing: it either is or it isn't.
Yeah,
someone's right.
Yeah, someone is.
Or no one's right. Like, that's how I look at religion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Indians go hard for the lady with the 8 blue arms.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I mean, that's a lot of people going riding with the blue-armed lady.
Yeah, that's a lot of arms. So it's an impressive thing.
So it's like, who's to say maybe your thing did happen.
That's and why this thing happened. That's why I was in a private school, and then I was in third grade. I was in a Baptist.
Yeah, weird flex.
Right? I don't want to brag, but my mom put herself in debt trying to give me a so-called better education. But every Thursday we had chapel. We always had to wear white on chapel days and whatnot. But I remember I was in third grade and I found out about other religions. And that was such a like, the fuck?
Yeah, what are they doing?
What are you? No, you guys are joshing. What are you talking about? No, this is, but you're telling me, but there's other religions. That was right. Such a mind fuck. And I never recovered from that. And I'm happy that I'm also borderline impressed.
Did you show up to school the next day with a joint? Like, hey, this is the, I don't know if you guys have seen Rastafarians.
Yeah.
It's nice over there.
Yeah. I couldn't get over it. It was like, so if I was born in India.
Yeah.
I would not know about the whole moonwalking on water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, water to wine, all this stuff.
No.
I never recovered.
And if you were born in the Middle East, dude, you'd be five times a day, you know, hitting the mat.
Yeah. Going one direction.
And being like, well, I will never eat bacon.
Yeah, just such a wild.
In a 9-hour flight, someone's like, let me get the triple bacon cheeseburger. It's just like such a different reality.
A whole different thing. We're creatures of our surrounding. And, you know, whether we like it or not, your country, wherever you're born and wherever you're at, is such a massive part of your surrounding. Huge. And is going to, you know, just speed up aspects of your personality and also slow down other. I think about that all the time. If I was born in a different country, England, imagine being born in Russia. Oh, that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
This shit is cold all the time. I was born and raised in Florida.
And it's a wild, like, funny to them is completely different.
Wild.
If there even is such a thing. Like my buddy Fonto in LA, shout out to Fonto.
Fonto.
He's from like Ukraine, Russia, that area. And like his cousin flew in for like one of his shows.
And it was a bear. It was just a literal bear.
And I was like, hey man, like how you like? I'm like, this is your second day in America. Like how you liking it? And he was like, I've been trying to smile. That was all he said.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just turned around. I went like, okay.
I think that.
And I was like, bro, that's probably the funniest. Because it's just such a stereotype.
Yeah,
like, he nailed it.
I think that qualifies as an answer.
He goes, I've been trying to smile. And he's like, I was like, well, keep trying.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
The therapy works, man. Yeah. I mean.
I don't think that's even a word over there. I think therapy is just letting off an AK in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. Just taking the life of a bear with your own hands.
Like, I choked the bear. I feel better.
I feel so good.
Yeah.
So you just did a solid Russian voice.
I tried.
Sometimes
you have to just commit.
I can't do Russian. Vlad.
There you go. It's just certain.
And then avant. But then I become a Dracula.
You just ride.
I can't do Russian.
But what you can't do, you probably can do.
Ooh, bumper sticker.
What car is that on?
Oh, man. It's an
old Prius.
Yeah, a 96 Elantra.
Yeah.
That guy, if I see a bumper sticker, that bumper sticker on a car and it's not nice, hoo-wee, that's an optimist. That guy's glasses.
He's a substitute teacher, but he's like, one day I'm going to be full time.
It's a half full glass, but somehow overflowing. that's so much positivity right there. Oh, man. But I'm...
because you can do all kinds of voices.
I can do... I've got one solid... I got one impression that I'm proud of. I can do a French voice. I can't do Russian. I'm sure if I tried... But I've always, I don't know, voices are a fun time, but you got to look like a crazy person for a little bit of just practicing it at red lights and stuff.
You ever been like in the mirror in a public bathroom doing a bit?
Oh, man.
And someone comes in and just goes, what the fuck is going on?
I never doing a bit, but there's been sometimes I've been in a public bathroom and every now and then I'll just look at myself in the mirror and go, man, that's fucking nuts. That's me. That's what I look like.
Oh, yeah. You get
just like, you just look at yourself and go, you don't, see this perspective a whole bunch.
Yeah, like, would if you saw yourself, would you recognize yourself?
Yeah, man.
That kind of thing.
I don't know. Sometimes you stare at yourself for, like, the first 2 minutes of if you look at yourself in the mirror, and you're like, yep, that's who I am. And then you're at the 10-minute range, whole different experience.
You ever just stare into your own pupils and go, who the fuck are you?
I don't give a shit what anybody has to say. I think everybody has had a weird mirror moment in their life.
Every day.
We're just man enough to talk about it.
Yeah, but that's why people listen, is if you just say, like, hey, today I feel like shit. Yeah. This is why.
Everyone's had their crazy-ass person moment in front of a mirror. It just, start doing weird shit with your mouth.
Yeah, everything.
Let me just see what it looks like.
You gotta try shit.
I'm curious.
Dude, lately I've been at the point where I'll, like, look at my hand, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, because you don't think about doing...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that just... It's just weird.
Yeah, no. The older I get, the weirder and borderline worse it gets.
And then you watch Westworld. You ever watch Westworld? Oh, dude.
Season one of Westworld is one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen.
And then they didn't need anything else after that.
And they really didn't. They got a little weird on season two and season three. But that first...
I didn't even watch season three.
Yeah, season three is out there.
But that show is like... You're just like, man, what? I don't know. There's so many different... ideas and possibilities.
That show hit hard. That first season, I was addicted to.
That's when you start looking in the mirror like,
you just do so what weird am things. I? You just start stretching. I don't know. I've definitely done that. I've never talked to anybody about that. So I'm happy that that's now on record I have weird personed the fuck out in front of a mirror. Danced. Bah, bah. What does that look like?
Yeah, you have to.
Yellow leather, red leather. You just start saying, bro, I'm an insane person by myself. It gets worse. And that's the wildest thing so far about existence is that younger, nothing matters.
Right.
Nothing. When you're 19, nothing matters. I don't even know if Black Lives Matter when you're 19. Like, you don't do you not anything. You're
in the Hall podcast studios. Yeah. Does not affiliate with any of
that. What I mean by that is that you're not caught up in any.
No, I know what you mean.
At least I wasn't.
And nowadays, you probably would be.
Yeah, yeah. Black Lives Matter when you're 19. Whatever.
Because it's all, you know. Now everyone's got the cell phone. But coming up, it was like, yeah, let's just go outside.
Maybe that was it. It was just the internet being just kerosene to the fire of communication and movements and whatnot. Yeah. But when I was 19, literally nothing mattered to me. And now at 32, everything matters so much. Everything has weight. Everything.
But why do you think that changed?
I think you get mature, you know, now that I, like, at 19, any movement like that, Black Lives Matter, anything that fell off my back. And now at 32, I'm like, this is history. These years and moments are going to, when you look at a Black Lives Matter march, I'm like, that's going to be on the internet and the history books. And, like, that's an actual thing that's happening when before, I don't even think I acknowledged what was happening.
So you're just saying you have these little, like, check boxes in your head, like, whoa, we're living in a historical moment.
That's what happened. Yeah. Like, I look at, I don't know, 19, I was so carefree. And now at 32, I'm like, 5-year plan. We need to implement goals and pursue.
I think that's great though. But at the same time, my new thing, and I talked about this on, I don't know if it was last episode, but it was like, I have this, like, stupid little...
Yeah, yeah, you're talking about the list.
And it's like, if I can win today, you're sounding like David Goggins. You gotta win the day.
You do that for 3 years in a row.
Hey, that's what I'm saying.
There's a great book called Atomic Habits that made a lot of people talked about. And you basically, on that last episode, talking about winning the day, mm-hmm. is also talking about what that book offered, which was, it's not one massive decision that changes your life. Right. Very rarely is it, like, right there on a platter when it goes yes or no. It's the big decision happens over in, like, an infinite amount of smaller decisions. And they bring up a two really good examples, and hopefully I don't butcher them, but an airplane leaving from LA to New York, and it just starts 2 feet to the left as soon as it takes off the runway. It ends up in Canada. As soon as that plane leaves, and it's just the smallest of degree off.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It ends up in a whole different part of the world.
Right. And meaning like 2 inches eventually going to equal thousands of miles.
So that's such a small decision that sends a trajectory so that you're not able to see at the time.
Right.
2 inches off the, you know, the tarmac doesn't feel like anything, as even visually. But now all of a sudden you're in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
And that small decision ended up bringing you to a whole different place. And the other example was you're in a room. It's 25 degrees. There's an ice cube on a stool. And then you turn the degree up to 26. You turn it to 27, 28, 29, 30. Nothing happens to the ice cube. 31, 32, it starts to melt.
Right.
And everybody looks at it going from 31 to 32 and it melting. And everybody goes, whoa, that's the thing that did it. Which kind of has some truth, but don't overlook the 25, 26, 27, 28, 29 degrees of, well, those had to happen first before the magic happened of the ice cube melting.
That's beautiful.
So what I'm just trying to get at, though, is that now being aware of those things, those things matter, especially 5 years down the road, and always on borderline, maybe paranoid about what those small decisions will have in the future. Who knows?
But yeah, why I'm like, if you just keep doing what you're passionate about, like if you look back 5 years, my thing is always like, I feel like there's this garage door closing at all times and I'm just running towards it. And I got to do the movie slide get to the other side.
And at 19, 18, was there a garage door?
No,
not for me. Not even close. Yeah. I look at those moments, and I'm happy that I'm out of them, but I'm still jealous of being in my late teens, early 20s, where nothing mattered. Family. I was so self-absorbed, probably, and just grateful for living. Yeah. And now your definition of what you want, I think, just changes the older you get. You know, if I give you $10 at 20 and I keep giving you $10 and then at 21 I give you 12, you start getting excited for $14 on the next year. I think it's in human nature to have a hunger for significance.
Yeah, and always elevating.
Always. Well, who wants to go backwards?
Right.
You know, that's no fun. Who wants to go backwards just to learn a lesson? Whack.
Yeah, what the hell?
No, I don't want to learn I don't want to learn a lesson that I should have learned and that I'm fully aware. I was like, God, I should have done this when I was like a long time ago.
Yeah, and then you start realizing that a lot of where you are is your own, I don't want to say fault, but it's your own doing.
Oh,
regardless of the great shit you've done and the stuff that you've not done, or even not even started on that you've always wanted to do. And it's like, yeah, it's just when you realize it all comes down to you, and even more nowadays, there's no one that's going to come and be like, hey, I want you on, you know, this, if you haven't already done the work yourself, you know, like there's no more like, oh, come do Carson or whatever. Unless you get to that level. And I feel like now by the time you even get to the level, like where you build your own, you know, thing, your own show, your own radio show, whatever. It's like by the time you like get that validation from those people, you're like, oh, I don't even need that anymore.
Yeah. The definition of what you desire changes. And that is so tiring. It's just so like, oh man, when I was 19, nothing, none of that.
Yeah.
You know, but you said that you wouldn't want to call it your fault. I'm team think like it's harsh, but this is how I go about it. And it's definitely helped me out is that the moment I realized that essentially everything is my fault, the more I started getting shit done and pursuing. Like, right. It's a, now granted, there are some exceptions that of like some things aren't your fault. You're at a red light, you get hit. Sure. But for the most part,
yeah,
everything is your own fault. If, yeah, you know, if,
and that's a wild thing to accept. And I think a lot of people don't even have that thought.
I mean, it's an uncomfortable thought.
Oh, for sure.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Now, there's plenty of things in my life that I don't like right now, but I still look at it and go like, well, it's because I fucking did this 6 months ago, dude.
Exactly.
That's on me.
Uh-huh.
And it's very easy to try. There's so many times where I'll be like, oh, this isn't my fault, and I'll try to find a reason for this to happen, and then that reason still is connected back to me.
Like, oh, yeah, you try to pawn it off on
something.
I try
to pawn off, you lash out.
I think a lot of it, though, is just a balance, because being pissed off at yourself to get to the next step is a great motivation, but at the same time, like, I'll mentally jump myself, like, why the fuck did you not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you got to just not beat yourself up.
Yeah, it's
but also beat yourself up.
You said the key word there, which is balance. God. And then to have a balance of pursuing and also, you know, being happy, because you're going to die one day, so am I. We should get some level of happiness in there, and it's not just grinding out, you know, just content, podcast, clips, stand up, and all that.
You gotta enjoy it.
You have to have some escape, but it's moderation and balance, man. That's the key, because too much of a good thing becomes a bad thing, and too much of a bad thing still just becomes a worse thing. Mm-hmm. It just becomes. Yeah. Next thing you know, you're 60 and went, I didn't make a lot of friends.
That's my biggest fear, dude, is just to be like, wake up at 60 and be like, what did you do?
Yeah.
What did you not do?
So, and then that's why, you know, you always have I know my biggest goal, and everyone, every entertainer, anybody should have their one ideal, you know, big goal in life, I suppose. Maybe not. Maybe you shouldn't. Sure. But I know for me, and it has been like this for the last couple of years, is that if I'm able to provide for a family through entertainment, I'm going to die happy.
That's beautiful. I think that's that sets up everything else.
I don't need all this crazy fame. Granted, if you have crazy fame, you're going to be able to provide for a family. That's just
100%.
100%.
But that's the trade-off.
Yeah, but I'm trying, I mean, to be able to have a kid, take care of my wife, and be able to do it via podcasts and doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, what you love.
Speaking, yeah.
What you love.
Entertainment is awesome.
Getting paid off your words is probably one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
In the world.
And I'll never take for granted that I've been able to do that. I have been doing that. Definitely, yeah, awesome, got some luckiness in there. But like I said before the start of this podcast, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yep.
You got to at least be at the crossroads of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. The hardest part is showing up.
Because sometimes you're just that guy that was in the room.
Yeah.
You're like, so, hey.
So many times. Too many times. I've, you know, if it wasn't from other comedians, you know, sticking their neck out for me, there's no way any of the cool victories that I've had would have ever happened.
100%. And then you just have to know, like, I might not even be able to pay this person back ever the way I want to, but
yeah,
if you can pass that to the next guy,
mm-hmm,
and do the same thing that the older guy or the bigger comic did for you, for them.
I remember when I was featuring for some local comedians, and they paid for my dinner, and I was a little upset about it, but then he just kind of looked at me borderline sternly and was like, just pay for your features dinner whenever you start headlining. And now every time when I pay for a features dinner it's always like, hell yeah. The, you know, the tradition stays alive.
Yeah, yeah. This I've feels passed good. The torch.
This is the best $15 that I've ever spent because
but
I feel.
But that's cool though, man.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta pass it on.
Like, man, I've gotten to crash on people's couches and I could never pay them back.
Mm-hmm.
Not right now, anyway. I will one day. But it's like I could let someone else stay on my couch, another comic.
Yeah.
That moved to New York.
I got an extra bedroom over at my house, and I always try my best. Excuse me. I always try my best to help out a performer because I know how I've been there. I've stayed on couches. I've stayed in random people's houses. I once slept at my bartender's home in Toledo, Ohio.
Dude, Toledo, Ohio is...
What you know about Toledo? Mud hens, baby.
Dude, Toledo made me move to New York.
How'd that happen?
So...
Are you from Toledo?
No, dude. I grew up in Bradenton.
Is that... Where's...
By Sarasota? Florida?
Yeah, okay. Home of the Sarasota Sailors, which is so many S's. I'll never forget
that. Yeah, it's not good for a kid with a lisp. No. Don't move there.
Sarasota Sailors.
Yeah, I play... I'm the starting quarterback for the Sarasota Sailors.
What's your name? Therry.
Yeah.
Aw, man.
Happy Saturday.
Yeah.
And, I forgot what we were saying.
Sarasota. Bradenton.
Bradenton. We were talking about... Oh, Toledo. So, yeah, I was part of the... I was in the door-to-door game for a minute. Sales.
Okay.
Just, it's like a lot of...
So super fun, very rewarding and fulfilling.
Can be.
Yeah,
it's all
awesome.
It's all about having the right team.
I see, that was me just being a dick, and now I'm leaned in. I'm intrigued.
So yeah, there was like these things called summer programs, and they just put like 100 kids essentially, usually like between 18 and like 25, usually college kids, usually Mormons, because they're like already going door-to-door trying to sling Joseph Smith, the prophet, you know, Christ. So they're like, go sling some alarms or some knives or some solar panels.
Cutco? Was it Cutco knives?
No, I was selling home security.
Oh, okay.
So that was like kind of my bread and butter. And I got a summer program in Ohio, and it ended up being like not what they said it was. We were in a hotel room, four dudes, one hotel room. Like they rented out the whole hotel. And then they just drop you off at 10 a.m. on turf, which is just a neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then they pick you up at like 10 p.m. And you do that every day for a summer. And you just sell. That's your number one. It's basically like a slave program.
What was that? What parallels did you grab from sales that worked for stand-up?
Crowd work.
Okay.
Is like if someone heckles... It's not a problem because I'm used to, like, someone being like, get the fuck off my porch or, like, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
Or, like, everything's on the fly. But, yeah, I was in a hotel room in Toledo, Ohio, and I'm like, this is the closest I've ever been to New York. I might as well just move, like, tonight.
Wild.
And I just left. And I was like, I'm just going to do stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what I was doing. But I wanted to ask you, when did you... What age did you pick up the mic? And you're like, this is what I'm going to do.
So it was kind of a borderline, I don't want to say accident, but partially is because of my brother. My brother is a phenomenal entertainer. He has a one-man show, and he just travels all over this planet doing his one-man show.
That's dope.
It's a crazy lifestyle and traveling is harsh, but the reason why I bring in my brother is because he never did stand-up. Stand-up was never his thing. He's a phenomenal improviser. He's a phenomenal musician. He's a phenomenal actor. So there's only one big pie of the entertainment, you know, dessert that I was like, well, he hasn't done this.
Right.
But he was a theme park actor. I was super young. I went to auditions. And I quickly knew, because of my brother, that I am not very good at this. I can't audition worth shit.
That was your comparison.
That was my comparison. And not even comparison, but it was just, it was the foundation of my awareness of, like, I am not good at this because I know what good looks like. I've been seeing my brother's show, what my brother does, and all of his friends, and I know I'm not that. So I need to find a stage that will have me, because I know stage time is a priceless education. And what is the biggest set of arms open for anybody in entertainment? Open mics. You don't have to join an improv troupe or anything. You don't have to take classes.
You don't have to shower. You don't have to have a job. You could be fresh out of prison, homeless.
All of it.
If you can sign your name,
that's it.
Open mics
and,
are for
and
you.
And here's the thing. You may not even have to do that if you know the host. The host is also homeless, you're also
remember you want to share a tent?
Remember,
I'll put you up.
Remember when we split that Snickers bar? I'm looking for five. Give me 5 to 7. So then that's the reason why I got into stand-up. It was because I was bombing at these auditions, and I think it was only like one or two that I was like, yeah, no, that ain't it.
But they're devastating enough.
Yeah, I wasn't deflated. I knew. I was like, that was not good enough. I agree with the people that are not giving me what I'm auditioning for.
That awareness is what will save your life.
I hope so.
In the entertainment industry. So, no, because all of LA, everyone that waits tables is, I am the greatest thing of all time.
Yeah.
I am going to be the next Leonardo DiCaprio. And it's like, if they had the, no, I agree with the casting director, this was not good.
I would be way more well off. I was young and I agreed. And so then I started doing stand-up, and I did stand up like 6 or 7 times, and then I bombed on the 6th or 7th time.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like the first 6 went great, but it was still like, well, there's a couple of laughs there, here or there. But I don't think it's possible to bomb on your 6th or 7th time. I don't know. Everyone has their own definition of bombing.
Right.
But when I bombed on that 6th or 7th time, I just remember going like, I didn't know that was at stake. I didn't know that was like, I didn't know that could happen. I didn't know how bad it was going to feel. And I tried purpose on my first set to, in a weird way, I tried to bomb because I wanted to get it out of the way. So the very first joke that I ever said into a mic was, do you guys know what's funny about cancer? Absolutely nothing. That was the first thing I ever said into a mic, with intention of hopefully finding out what it's like to have no one laugh. And I knew going into that.
I mean, that's kind of where is this going?
Yeah. And that was the end of it. But stand up, that's what got me into it. I bombed on that time. I quit for a year. I moved in with a local comedian, Will Hageman, and he got done with a show. He was featuring at something. He came home, and this was the big moment. We took the scenic route, but he came home, and I was having a beer, and I asked him, how'd the show go? And he went, it went pretty good. So a lot of these new bits are working. And I looked at him, I said, man, I miss doing stand-up comedy. Then he cracked open a beer and said, prove it. And that fucked me up. that hit me hard. Shit. That was him basically calling me out on,
yeah, like, bitch,
this throwaway statement of,
wow.
I said I miss it because I was just trying to relate. I don't know. I didn't think that statement was going to have that much weight, especially in response of 2 words, prove it. So I started doing comedy again.
And what were you doing at the time?
Nothing.
Being a roommate?
I was being a roommate. I was working at Universal. I was working at theme parks. I was an animated character, so I was in costume, just sweating dick. Still a great job, though. I'll always defend and respect the people in the costumes.
I'm glad you're out there riding for them.
Oh yeah, it's some of the best, dude. It's legit one of the coolest experiences is being in one of those huge, heavy costumes. And the reason just being in a theme park, because this is the coolest part about it is that when we walk out and we do stand up, I'm like, okay, we got to get these people liking me real quick,
right?
And if they don't like me, then the rest of the set is going to be a struggle.
Uh-huh.
You walk out in one of those costumes and you don't say anything. mm-hmm. and everyone loves you.
It's but is that
instant admiration? But is
that you or the giant turtle that
it's
you are?
Definitely not you. It's definitely See, not
this
you.
This sounds like such a...
It's an illusion.
This, yeah, now this is sounding sad.
Yeah, yeah.
When you walk out and you're like, you're just like in this, like what kind of costume would you
So be? I was Homer. I definitely Homered out.
So you're in a Homer Simpson costume. Yeah. You're just going, they love me.
Oh.
Everybody loves me.
It was the best. You just become a rock. No! You just become a rock star. And you don't talk. You're in the costume. Just walking goofy, just scratching ass, animating.
And you're like, I'm on the clock right now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be wild.
Walk out, do 20 minutes, walk back in. You're off for 40. It's a pretty sweet job.
So what are you doing in between 40?
Playing video games, writing, drinking water. That's the first thing that you're doing is that you're drinking a lot of water.
Oh, because it's like 102 degrees.
I remember in my training, they said, don't drink milk during the summer because in the costume, it could curdle. That's how hot it gets.
Don't drink milk in the costume?
Don't drink milk and then go into the costume and go out and do your set because then the milk, it gets so hot in the costume while it's in your stomach.
Oh, I was trying to figure out what you're talking
it
about.
It will rotten. It will rot. And next thing you know, you have really bad milk. Like, you shouldn't be eating ice cream and then going out into one of these costumes at 130 degrees. I don't even know how hot it gets.
Did anyone of your coworkers, like, hit the pavement on their 20?
What, hit the pavement, like, pass out? Yeah. I remember the first set that I did, I thought I was going to pass out. I thought, I was like, I need a new job.
Your ears are ringing and you're just Homer Simpson.
And then
you're
like, what is life? Oh, okay. So I probably should not be sharing too many.
You don't have to.
But there's one of them that I have to.
We could edit.
It's one of my favorites. So I was Alex the Lion from Madagascar.
Okay.
And I would go out and I would do sets with the penguins. Kowalski. Which you Love know about it. The Kowalski penguin.
Dude, the penguins are the best.
The penguins killed.
Was there someone in a penguin?
There was four people and four separate penguins.
Let's go.
And I remember there was this girl. They were shorter. I was, of course, taller to fit the costume. And there's this girl who, as soon as she showed up, she was hung over. And I was like, damn, dude, she is in rough shape. And I went ahead. I bought her a red Powerade. Oh, dude, it's rough. I bought her a red Powerade because I was like, you know, electrolytes. You're going to need to hydrate. I was trying to help out. Here's a red Powerade. Right. And we're in the middle of the first set. And she she goes over in the middle of the set. She just starts waddling over. She starts waddling over to a bush. And she just vomits red Powerade through the mouth of the penguin. So it looks like this penguin is having like an exorcism or something.
Yeah, it got shot.
Yeah, and then it gets even worse because then she goes back and then like 5 minutes later, I was laughing so hard just seeing all this red liquid leave a penguin's mouth into a bush.
Was this mid-set?
Mid-set. In front of
you're everyone's dancing and she just waddles over. She
waddles over to an azalea and then just lets it rip. Just lets it rip, and then
never broke character.
Well, I mean, here's the thing: you're in a costume. You're breaking character. No, the character is broken. She's vomiting what looks to be blood in front of a bunch of Venezuelans.
They're like, Kowalski's never done that.
No, yeah, that's not in the show. That's not canon.
But I'm saying she never took the helmet off.
No,
whatever.
And that's the thing in that costume. You can't even take off the helmet.
Just a onesie?
It's like one massive small room. And also with it was just, she's stuck. You can't even get out of that specific costume by yourself.
What the hell?
You need somebody to unzip you, and like, it's a process getting into a lot of these costumes. And I remember too is that, oh man, this one's rough. She goes ahead and because of not all the Powerade leaving through the beak of the penguin, it also hit the bottom of the costume. So there's red Powerade shooting out of the beak of this Kowalski, and the excess of the red then starts to stain the bottom of the costume, which is essentially the taint of the costume.
It's in the...
Yeah, and it's a penguin, so it's got white fur all around its legs. So now it just looks like this penguin just had, like, became a woman. It looks
just
like...
Just menstruating.
Just menstruating in front of tons of Venezuelans. That was too good. Too good. Seeing costume characters
and
fall,
what costume? And you're in a lion suit.
I was
just watching it go down.
Just staring through a mouth.
And you're still dancing?
Oh, yeah. I think I was laughing at that point.
So you're... The eye holes are in the mouth. Because sometimes in those costumes, you don't know where the guy's looking out of.
Yeah, it's sometimes in the mouth. Sometimes it's through the eyes. It really... I think more times than not, it's through the mouth. And you're just staring through a mesh.
That's so wild.
It's one of the coolest jobs... I will always say animated characters is, it's such a fun time. You just walk out, dance with people. Everyone loves seeing you.
And it's just 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah. It's 20 minutes during the summer, and then it's 30 minutes if it's like December.
Gotcha.
It all depends if it hits 90 degrees or not.
Okay. So that's the threshold?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, it's only 89. Get your ass up there.
Hey, that happens, and everyone does not like those days. But I'll be honest with you, I'd rather take a super hot 20-minute set than an 85, 30 all day every day.
Oh,
not even
that
close.
Sounds like a good, yeah. It's a good ratio.
But, yeah, so going back to it is that it was – theme park auditions that told me no, that I quickly was aware of and agreed to, that I agreed with them. I was like, yeah, there's no way I would be able to do that. I understand. That kind of got me going into stand-up comedy, and then Will Hageman saying, prove it. And then I got into it and then got bit by it, had a couple of good sets, and then that was it. Then forever always trying to get better at it.
No, because you've been at it for a minute, dude. Your stuff is dialed in.
Yeah, I'm 32, and I've been doing it since basically 12 years. I'm happy.
So you were 20?
I was 20.
Okay.
So maybe 21. But I just remember 23 being the first year where I was like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going to try my absolute best in
making... And it all makes sense.
Well, yeah, in
three years, you feel like it all makes sense. 7 years, you're like, what is, you know, there's like, there's years where you're like, this is my calling, this is it. And then there's like, maybe like a couple months each year where you're like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, it gets, that whenever I talk to somebody who's like 2 years in or something, and God knows I am not all knowing of comedy or entertainment, we're in the same exact shoes of just trying to get in with clubs and trying to make some financial outcome out of all of the mess. That I don't even look at stand-up comedy as stand-up comedy. I look at stand-up comedy as entertainment. Like, that's how I look at all of anything creative, is entertainment as a whole and the entertainment business.
Right. Is it entertaining is your benchmark?
What was that?
Good. It's like you're not like, this is that. You're just going, it's all entertainment.
Yeah.
Is it entertaining? Yes or no? That's your benchmark.
I the one thing I want from my audience, or I should say the one thing that I don't want from my audience, is them walking out going, you know what? I think I really learned something tonight. I don't want them to go, you know what? I think I'm a Democrat now, or I think my political views have been challenged to the point where I look at things different.
Yeah,
there's a spot and place for that.
Right.
And that is not for me. I want to make the people in front of me laugh as hard and as much as I possibly can. Period. I think
you do that.
I try.
You do that. I had probably 20 people at that Orlando, the improv show.
Yeah.
And they were all like, dude, that guy Ross. Even my buddy afterward that I was talking about, when he walked by, I don't know if you remember, he was like, oh, dude, I love that guy.
About black-haired guy? Did he have hair product? I think there was some hair. I thought I smelled some Paul Mitchell.
Yeah, one of my boy has the mullet. Has the mullet going.
Hell yeah. But I don't want... I don't want a Daily Show my stand-up. I don't want a Ben Shapiro my act. That's for them. I want to be a pure, uncut jester.
I like that.
Yeah. That's the name of my game.
Nah, dude, your energy on stage, like, it's just, it's awesome,
man. Well, I appreciate it. I think it took a while to feel comfortable with what I'm doing and going, yeah, no, that's my voice, and that's what my whole goal is. And I guarantee you that's going to change probably. I mean, I might be 45 doing comedy, talking about voting rights. I that's the future unknown. But as it is right now, uncut jester.
Yeah, no.
Little bells on the top of my little weird half
that's
tacos.
That's the best job. If you're not the king, you better be the jester.
Yeah. Why not?
That's the two best jobs in the kingdom.
That's it, right?
Mm-hmm. Gets away with murder. Like, the jester is allowed to roast the king.
Yeah.
Anyone else, they go, off with his head.
Yeah, I never even thought of that.
And they're like, but what about that guy? They're like, well, he's got the bells on his hat.
He's got the bells on his hat. Look how funny his shoes are.
And you never have to and you never have to go to war.
That's so funny. It's like, but he just called the king a fat piece of shit. Yeah, but look at his costume.
Yeah, they go, look at that. He's funny.
Look how funny
he is. It's his job.
Yeah, yeah.
Your job is to go fetch grain from or whatever.
Yeah, I think the king's a fat piece of shit. Oh, do you?
Yeah. You got that guy in the hood decapitating.
Where's your wife? I need your wife.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. That's my main perception of entertainment and... you know, just being a creative, because I know that's definitely what I am, of trying to, I like creating things. The worst part of my life right now is that I'm not making as many sketches the way that I used to, but there is nothing better for me so far. There's nothing better that I've experienced than creating something out of thin air and having it exist for years to come. Best thing I've experienced so far in entertainment, I was in a film festival. I helped write this short film called Rent Money, and we got to watch it in a sold out movie theater. And that maybe not sold out. That's probably an exaggeration. It was probably like 80% full. Enough for it to be like, oh shit, this has got a live audience. And those were the first laughs I feel like I was able to enjoy.
Where you're like, I did all this.
Well, I'm doing comedy. People start laughing. I'm not enjoying it because I'm doing something. I'm thinking about the next line. Where are we going after this?
Uh-huh.
When I see people laugh doing comedy, I'm like, all right, well, that's what's supposed to happen.
Right.
And
on to the next thing.
On to the next thing, mm-hmm. Segueing into the next
bit. The show must go on.
The show, yeah. You're busy.
No, I feel that.
But when you play a 12-minute video with a beginning, middle, and end in a movie theater... And then you're in the back row going like, oh, dude, I hope that opening joke hits because this is where I think they should laugh. But then you just sit there and hear laughter and you're not saying anything. You're just watching it along with them. I think that's the best entertainment high.
You became an audience
member. Yeah. I mean, I became an audience member, but I was more importantly just sitting there. It's not talking.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't have to think about.
You were like, enjoy what I have already created.
Yeah, yeah.
Not on the live.
Yeah. And then that.
Because most of your life is live.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
which is insane.
Yeah, that's wild.
If I did this live, it'd be a stutter fest.
Oh yeah, it's a definitely different ball game. It's doing live radio is the there's the pros and cons of it being live.
Yeah.
Because there are pros of it being live.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's breaking news. We get to talk about it. But it's also, you know, I hate mispronouncing words or not knowing something. And then it's like, well, that was in front of thousands of people. There it is. You know? It's definitely...
There's no taking it back. You can't take back the spoken words.
You can't.
It's just...
The only way you could take something back is if I said something... Like, even right now, I said earlier something. I was like, oh, that's a little hot. Hopefully that doesn't get lost in translation of saying how little I care when I was 19.
Right, right, right.
That nothing mattered.
No, I...
Right?
You're good.
But I thought about that. I was like, I would never say that on air. And if I did, I would say something and hopefully I would be aware enough to curse live on air so that way they can dump it. They can dump the last 8 seconds of whatever I said. I've never done that, though. I've never...
But you have a scapegoat.
Like. There is one scapegoat because we take callers all the time to join in on the discussion. So there is a 16-second delay between what we're saying and what people in their cars are hearing.
So if you said something horrific... And you just went, fuck, 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 fuck.
Yeah.
Right after?
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, yeah. The producer of the show.
And he just thumbs up to the guy.
Or the host of the show would then dump that. But that would be, like, bad news bears. That it would not be good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because then all my boss would be like, don't ever do that ever again.
Right.
You. How about you sign up for what you say? Yeah. How about you think a little bit more before you talk? I don't know. I've been dumped once. On live air. And that was just because I insinuated somebody drinking their own piss, which bodily fluids, FCC
guidelines states.
Gets a little weird.
Bodily fluids are not allowed.
Yeah, they don't like poop and pee stuff.
Go back to calling someone a pussy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's getting the ratings up.
Yeah, I could call somebody a pussy ass bitch on air, which is
the FCC's like,
hey, hey. You could, that's fair.
Play
game.
On.
Play on.
Yeah.
No challenge.
Yeah, the ref gave him a warning.
It's yeah.
It's so weird.
It is strange. You're underneath a microscope. Everybody knows who listens to that show knows that I'm getting married, which is just odd. But
congrats on that, man.
I'm beyond stoked. I'm very, that's very wild. Excited. She's the best. I could go on and on about my fiance Olivia, but I call her Bob.
Interesting.
We call each other Bob.
Just that's your thing.
It started.
Sometimes you can't even explain it.
I mean, this one has a hearty one, which was we called each other Babe, and then one day we like California'd it, and so like hey Bob, I don't know Bob, and then Bob.
It turned into Bob.
It turned into Bob. Babe turned into Bob.
I like that. That's funny.
It was a little, our little thing, but she's way better at life than I am. And she lets me do all the...
And y'all met?
We met at Theme Park Entertainment, yeah.
Was she the Red Power Raid?
She,
is that how you guys hit it off?
Yeah, no, I wish. I get to tell my grandchildren about this. You know, she showed up hungover. And,
yeah.
I gave her a red powder, and then she vomited through her beak.
And then right through the costume. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, so it's funny because you go to those, like, you know how they have, like, the Disney breakfast where, like, the characters are there?
Yeah.
And, like, you just wonder, because the characters don't say anything for the most part.
No.
Nothing. And so you wonder.
Yeah, what, in the costume?
You go, who is in there,
and yeah.
What is going on?
Mysterious.
Yeah. And you just think it's some college kid that's just absolutely hungover or the Molly's still kicking in.
Yeah.
And they're just
having a fun time. Because
there's a lot of those theme park entertainers where you're just like you can kind of relate to them as like sign spinners. Like, why are they going so hard right now? Like, you did a backflip.
I mean, it's
ketamine's hit.
It's just fun. I don't know.
I'm sure if you just let go.
Someday, and that's the thing. It's inevitable that you end up letting go. If you do the job, you know, in a costume for more than a month.
If you're face down getting zipped up on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then someone picks you up. You're like, hey, we're literally in this game.
No, I think every character does this. Is that after a while, you start making faces in the costume, but not like faces like sticking out your tongue. You are reacting to the people that you are interacting with. And
it translates.
Well, no, it doesn't translate.
Body language.
Body language.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Because
then if you're like, if you back up a certain way or like.
Yeah, I mean, it's an animated character. That's
right.
The title that I was told. And anime just means to bring to life. You're grabbing an inanimate object and bringing it to life. But just even you make faces organically by the end of it. If I shake your hand, I'm going,
exactly. Yeah.
A lot of that.
But people can feel that.
I don't even know.
I think so.
I hope so.
I feel like you can.
But I learned that was my first step in the world of entertainment. And I'm forever grateful for it, which is odd. Wild. But it taught me a lot. It taught me, I mean, it was cool getting laughs without speaking by doing physical comedy.
Yeah, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the Charlie Chaplin thing. Like, they didn't have, I don't think he's spoken to a mic once.
Man,
people would go watch movies of him just doing funny stuff.
That's so sick.
How crazy is that?
Different ball game. Different.
How crazy is that?
And then it just flash.
Bro, like, imagine just,
some words.
I don't need a mic.
Fuck? What are we doing here?
Bro, well, I got this cool. I'm going to do this thing where this boxer never hits me because I'm always behind him. Like,
yeah.
He had these little bits, dude.
Yeah, just visual comedy. What a killer. What?
Yeah, and he had the Hitler stash.
Hitler stash.
Or was it the Chaplin
stash? I think it was the Chaplin stash because
You think Hitler ripped it from him?
I don't know.
I don't remember the years. I don't know who came first, the Chaplin or the Hitler.
I would think it was a common mustache at the time.
That might be right.
I think that it was just like one of the go-tos.
And Hitler finished it. He's like, I will be the,
no
the
one
last one to do this.
Will ever have this mustache.
Thank
Maybe
God.
That was his whole motivation.
I wish he did that with other things. I wish he pushed dogs in strollers. And people were like, whoa, we can't do that now. That's what Hitler did.
That's what you're doing with the time machine.
Just Hitler, give him stuff.
There's six things you have to do.
Hitler, can you be really into anime?
Yeah.
Can you dye your hair blue?
I need you to think that professional gaming is a legit way of life. I need you. Yeah, you can keep the mustache. Yeah. I need you to say, you got to put dogs in strollers.
Yeah.
And you have to name all your kids Aiden. Those are the three things that you got to ruin because there's too many Aidens.
Fucking Aiden.
There's too many Aidens.
Yeah.
We got to make that uncool. Dogs and strollers, so weird. Just walk them. They have legs.
They're faster than
and
you.
And video games, come. That shouldn't be a living, right?
Yeah. Talk about how much you love esports.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
That's so funny.
That's power, dude.
We got to weaponize Hitler.
That could have been the thing that turned him around, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, you know, we're never going to look past what you did, but thank you for, you know, thank you for loving avocado toast. So that's never on a menu.
Yeah. That's,
anywhere.
That's what we need from you. Are you up for the task?
Yeah.
Vass. That's my Hitler. Vass.
I feel like there's a lot of like,
Yeah. So here's one thing. I shouldn't say I love it, but World War II, I think it's the most fast. I'm such a World War II guy.
It's nuts.
It's gnarly. And it all started because I didn't know who the Axis powers were one day. I just remember asking myself that question, and it bothered the shit out of me.
You mean who's like the most powerful?
No, the Axis powers. So you have the Allied nations and the Axis powers, the countries that were Team Germany and, you know, Nazi Germany, which was Italy and Japan. I couldn't remember Italy and Japan, which I always think is weird that Italy somehow has missed out on all of the negativity of them being an Axis power. Like, I think that's how good pizza is. Maybe that's why they made pizza.
Could be.
For them to...
Like, yo, we got to get these people off our back.
We gotta remind people that we need a distraction for people to know that we are on the wrong side of history hard right now.
And then the Japanese were like, you know, they got a bomb dropped on them. They're like, yo, you know what? We're going to make sushi.
And the whole Japan aspect of World War II is so nuts to me. Because they just fought to the very... They were fighting... And we were fighting Japan post the collapse of Germany.
They chose violence.
They just kept going.
They went in.
It became like a pride thing.
Yeah. Because I think when you're that small of a country, like the Spartans, I would have never fought Persia as a Spartan. I'd be like, how many do we have? 300?
300,000, right?
Yeah.
No.
1, 2, 3, 4. And they have 10,000. Like, guys, I'm not good at math, but this is fucked.
Yeah, we are underdogs.
That movie would have been the last $2.99.
Yeah.
If I was in the army, I'd be out of there, dude.
Yeah, I'm happy I wasn't a Spartan because then the movie would have been called $2.99.
I'd be like, yo, I know we all look shredded, yeah, but they got 10,000.
Yeah, and that's not marketable. $2.99 isn't a good movie. You yeah, know, you're not like, seeing a movie called $2.99. Yeah,
the 300.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually $2.87 because 13 guys were like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
They left in the middle of the night.
Now you got to name the movie Rounding Up. You don't want it. You don't want it. That sounds like a rom-com. Yeah. That's not what you're shooting for there. I think who did that? Was it Zack Snyder? Who did 300? I think it was Zack Snyder.
I don't remember. It's an interesting movie for sure.
Yeah, it was like, what do guys
it
want?
It was like fake, but also just real.
Yeah, no, I remember watching that and going like, that was badass. And then they made a sequel.
And then you realize that it is kind of dumb.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, they all got shot by arrows at the end, and you were like, I mean, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, yeah.
They're laying there with the abs, yeah, like, with their
CG'd abs.
They died with their LA Fitness membership in hand, like, ugh.
Their last words were cardio.
I'm like, your city wasn't that nice. Y'all should have just went somewhere else.
If yeah,
10,000 people want it, guess what?
You guys really believed in yourself on that.
Yeah.
You guys, I mean, that's where believing in yourself can go a little wrong here.
And then, like, what happened to the people back home?
Oh, raped, pillage. Yeah, you know, I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea. No, yeah.
No, there was no text message.
Yeah, there should
or
be
like
a sequel.
Or, like, phone call.
Yeah, that's...
Could you imagine being in, like, the village of Sparta or whatever, and
yeah,
then, like, you just see 10,000 people come over the hill, and you go, well, I guess our guy's lost.
That's one way of finding out.
Yeah, like, well, fuck.
Okay, so Dad died. Yeah, that's... What a fun way to find out that my father's not coming back, because that's an invasion.
Oh, my God.
That... Wild. But World War II, beyond... Yeah. I'm super... I still watch it. I watch stuff about it.
It's insane.
Multiple times a week, I would say.
Yeah. And it's just constantly in your face, too, on, like, certain channels or, like, there's always a video game.
Always a video game. Yeah. Always. I have Call of Duty World War II, and I never played it online. I just did the story mode.
And the stories are dope.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's fascinating. What got me into World War II was not knowing the Axis powers, and then also really not knowing how or why our species got to that point.
Well, I think there's a lot of strings being pulled behind the scenes. There's a lot of people that like war in this country.
Yeah.
That need it because that's their business.
Mm-hmm.
And those people have a ton of money, just like the pharmaceutical industry. There's like the industrial complexes.
Yeah.
There's medical, military, and I'm sure there's like a science one or whatever. Mm-hmm. But everyone has, like, their, you know, we got to sell guns. So, I don't know. I looked into, like, them knowing Japan was on the way into Hawaii, and they were just, like, let it happen because we need an excuse.
Well, I know there's, like, a bad instance where there's a Japanese diplomat at the White House, and he essentially got cold-shouldered, and no one ever spoke to him. And then not too long after that, Pearl Harbor happens.
Yeah.
And you know what's weird is that I don't want to say Pearl. This is going to sound so wild, but we're in the hall, baby. Pearl Harbor to me, which is definitely a very important part of World War II, I will not deny that, still think it's a little overrated. I think Pearl Harbor, in the grand scheme of things of World War II, is a little overrated.
Well, that was our... I see what you're saying.
In the sense of the attack itself, there's a handful of things that if the...
I mean, a lot of people died.
So, yeah.
A lot of ships were sunk. I don't think it was overrated, but I think it was, since Hawaii is technically the United States,
yeah,
even though it's like a 15-hour plane ride, I think that was like the first, like, they hit us at home.
Yeah. And it's still technically the first time we've ever been It's, and the reason why I would say overrated is because growing up, it was belted, you know, like, you know about Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And I think it's important because it galvanized the country to getting us in the war. Mm-hmm. And a war that, before Pearl Harbor, you had essentially the population of the country talking about...
Oh, here comes the leaf blower.
Oh, there it is.
Fantastic.
Love it. You had the population kind of being divided over how we felt towards Nazi Germany. There was a lot of people. You had Madison Square Garden selling out pro-Nazi rallies.
Yeah, it's nuts.
There's footage of 100-foot banners of the swastika in NYC in Madison Square Garden, like, and these massive venues. I think it was Madison Square. I just remember. I remember knowing that there was these massive conventions that were pro-Nazi. But the reason why I say it's a little overrated is that a lot... So people did die. I think it's 3,000, just shy of 3,000, somewhere around 3,000. This is always debated upon, but you had 60 million people die in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And the majority of those deaths are Russian. But I just think... That and also the attack itself, you did have some ships sink. It was not a successful attack in the big picture in hindsight,
right,
from the Japanese to Pearl Harbor. There's a massive oil refinery that goes essentially untouched. If they take out that oil refinery, it's a whole different ball game when it comes to the U.S. and in war.
Yeah, you don't touch our oil.
We
don't even touch our oil.
One of the big pieces of technology in World War II were aircraft carriers, and there were a lot of ships that just so happened to be lucky and not be at Pearl Harbor. And I think there was three or four ships that sunk that was like, ooh, that hurts. But then there was another four that got damaged but got repaired.
You sound like a seasoned war general.
Wow.
So we lost three boats. Oops.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
But, I mean, you saw what we dropped on them.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, we lost the battle, but we won the war.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was weird. I think that the bombs, I think it's like a 60-40 thing for me, because I think the side of people saying that those bombs shouldn't have been dropped, I think they are logical. I don't think anybody whose team the bombs shouldn't have been dropped, I don't look at them as fully dumb or idiots or just filled with I don't think they're illogical. I think there is some sense in going, like, I just don't understand why Japan kept fighting, man. That's all they had to do.
They're very like, we must bring honor.
Yeah, it was a different ball game. When it comes to, I mean, and then the general, after I believe the bombs dropped and they were like, we're surrendering, the main Japanese general just killed himself.
They do that.
Samurai style. Did the whole bang.
Yeah, they like.
I forgot what it's called. I literally
just watched a thing on it. But I was like, man, if only people had shame like that in this country, bro, then the United States would be way different, bro. Like if someone swerved across five lanes on I-4.
And they were like, I got to end myself.
And they didn't use their blinker, and they just got out of their car and just...
What have I done?
Yeah.
I've caused traffic.
I did not use my turn signal.
I have to leave. I'm done. I don't know why we're doing this voice for people who are samurai sorting. We're close. That was close, by the way.
It was not bad.
That was close in being like, oh, okay, they're doing a little Japanese thing there.
Oh, dude, I've done every accent on this show.
Hell yeah.
I was talking about this on one of the episodes. I'm like, when they chopped up Rogan, dropping the hard R over and over and over.
Oh, yeah.
I go, can someone just do that to this show and just pull up, like, all the accents of me going, hum, 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 hum,
hum, hum. Yeah, I know. It's, you know, I'd be what?
Like, thank you for editing for
so,
me.
So live on, whenever we're on radio, I always find this interesting is what voices are deemed okay.
Oh, okay.
And what not, and more importantly, why? It's strange. I don't know. I don't know what the full reality.
There's no FCC guidelines for accents.
You can turn your L's into R's and still you're not going to get fined. You know, you can do that whole thing, but it's also like...
You pussy ass bitch.
So I like all day on St. Patrick's Day, which just happened, I was always on air going, happy St. Patrick's Day. I thought that was so funny, just saying it in an Italian accent. And
was that Italian? That was like very...
I was going for Italian.
That's kind of Borat.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I think that's...
It's a Borat.
That's Kazakhstan.
Italian Borat.
All right,
I'll meet you halfway.
You're gonna stir the sauce, but you got.
But I've wondered where and why doing Italian, doing Irish is green light. No one gets hurt, but you know. Then all of a sudden, I don't know. Maybe it's just played out tropes. I think that might be the reason why. I don't. Who knows? I don't have an answer for it because it's weird to be like, hey, don't speak like a Chinese person or Japanese with the stereotypical thing of don't do that because that's punching down, because that's offensive to look at an entire culture and go, well, then you think you're better than them by saying...
Well, that's how the Japanese end up bombing Pearl Harbor. You think what, a week?
Yeah, yeah.
You fucking load up the carrier.
Yeah, I don't know. But all I know is that if I'm on air, I'd try not to do some things that are gonna cause a whole bunch of hate mail. And
do you read hate mail on the air?
Not on air, but I mean, you definitely.
I tell people, I'm like, I encourage hate comments. We'll read them live.
I remember one time I did a segment where I said, The listeners cannot offend me, roast me, we'll open up the phone lines.
Oh, shit.
And then people started calling in and just started making fun of me. And I kind of regret that. Well, here's the thing. It's like they're making fun of me, but then I can't really make fun of them because I don't know what they look like.
Right.
I'm going off of a name and whatever insult
They went after me. That's nuts. So you just had a red light, like, do I really look like that?
It's so odd. It's such an odd existence being live on air 5 days a week. I appreciate it. It's been such a game changer and a level up, but it's just really weird. Even right now, like the level of comfortability that I have on this podcast versus... I feel like it's almost two different muscles being live on air on a radio show versus doing this podcast.
Right. Well, yeah, man.
Also, we would have taken like, I don't know how long we're in, or hour.
Hour 30.
We would have taken, I don't know how many breaks. That's a lot of breaks. We take a lot of commercial breaks.
Oh, really?
It's 12 minute shows, essentially.
Do you headphone? Like in between?
Oh, yeah.
That's wild.
And then you take a little break, and then you're right back at it.
All right. Welcome back. So you said it's 12 minute episodes?
Essentially, 12 minute shows is how I was told to look at it.
Each segment has
a beginning, middle, and end. One topic, introducing, talking about it, closing thought about it.
Now, do you, because the Breakfast Club in New York, they do this. They just take the radio show and they put it on a podcast.
Yeah, we do that.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, dude, if you got to wrap it up, let people know where you can find you. I'll put all your stuff in the description.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, my name's Ross. I spell it like sauce, always and forever, which is not, it's not legally spelled that way. I was in the middle of...
Okay.
I was in the... Because
there was some questions of that.
Yeah. I was in the middle of 10th grade failing geometry. Because I was trying to figure out what my name spelled. I was just trying to figure out a different way to spell my name because I was bored as shit. And then I started writing it on my tests. And then the teachers, for some strange reason, didn't look it up. And then they believed it. And then
it's Florida.
Yeah. They can't pass the FCAT.
His mama must have loved sauce.
Yeah. So I went ahead and just started spelling it like sauce. And I thought it was super funny. And then next thing I know, it kind of just stuck. But I'll be the first one to always admit, no, my name is not spelled like sauce legally. It's spelled like gross. I'm one G away from being gross.
Gross.
But that's a lot.
It's a good name, though.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. It's one syllable. Oh, yeah, I'm happy with one syllable names.
Yeah, my buddy Chip was like, Ross, like sauce?
Yeah. And then it usually sticks that way. As soon as I say it's spelled like sauce, people, at least in my experience, go, oh, okay. And then they walk away thinking about it, which is a little bit more than just going like, I don't know, I just met this one guy.
Right, exactly.
And then it just stuck. But it's Ross Padgett. Check me out. Literally all the social media platforms, even ones that you probably, I'm on Crackle and Sushi Roll or whatever. I think there's a...
Just put them on everything.
Yeah, I'm on everything. But more importantly, come out to see a stand-up show. I really enjoy doing those. And listen to Real Radio 104.1 whenever you're in your car from 3 to 7. You can tell Siri to stream it. She'll stream it. It's live, and it's a radio station that should, I dare I say, should not exist, but it does because of its uniqueness.
It's awesome, yeah.
I know I'm biased, but there's no other radio station doing it like 104.1 down here in Orlando. It's odd. And if that doesn't intrigue you, give it a go.
It's awesome, man. You're very funny on stage, dude. Thanks for doing the show.
No, I'm so happy to finally do it. Episode 88. Let me at least put this on record. This podcast is very good.
Well, I that means a lot to me, especially coming from you.
Listened to a handful of episodes. I listened to the last one, and I was like, yeah, no, this is what you need. This is working very well, and I can't wait to see you. Keep getting. This is episode 88.
88, my man.
I want to see what episode 400 looks like. That's wild, right?
It's crazy, man.
I think I'm like, I've been doing 5 days a week, each episode 2.5 hours. I think we're in the thousands of. I don't even know how many episodes.
You've probably done a thousand podcasts.
It's a lot.
If you break it down like that.
It is a lot.
That's insane.
Well, dude, so much. It's got me talking like Batman. Oh, Rachel.
Well, there you go, everybody. Ross Padgett. Check him out. I got the links in the description. And, dude, yeah, thanks again for being on, man.
No, I'm awesome. So happy. I'm sorry that we went so long.
No, it's all good, dude.
Yeah, I went down quick.
Peace. Peace out, yo. Dude, that was awesome.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, man.